This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
Whether traveling or working remotely, we know your PC is your business headquarters. And when work takes you on the go, you need a laptop that can keep up. Dell's XPS 13 empowers small business owners to collaborate anywhere with incredible battery life and powerful performance. Reduce downtime by 50% and boost productivity with 4 times faster performance when you refresh to new Dell PCs featuring Intel Core processors. Explore the XPS 13 at Dell.com/radio.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Tracking Matthew in the Caribbean. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, who's filling in for Jennifer Koshenka on this Monday, October 3. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Torrential rains have been lashing Jamaica as Hurricane Matthew flexes its muscle. Haiti's bracing for as much as 2 feet of rain. It could threaten the U.S. later in the week.
Is he a genius or someone who takes advantage of the system? Hear reaction to Donald Trump's $916 million tax write-off.
In sports, U.S. beat Europe for the Ryder Cup in golf, and in baseball, the Baltimore and Toronto teams will play in the American League wildcard game tomorrow.
And a handful of cities where you can own a home for less than $1,000 a month.
Under $1,000 a month, that's a pretty decent deal. And that means for all these people, it's about a $40,000 income or less. And that, you know, making sure that you don't spend more than 28% of your pay on housing. And that's how they got these numbers. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, the average person can certainly afford a decent home in these places.
Market Watch reporter Katie Hill on cities where home ownership is affordable. She's here in about 20 minutes. Well, there are noticeably different spins on a New York Times story about Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump's decision to take a $916 million loss on his income tax return back in 1995. Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York City, who was one of Mr. Trump's advisors, told ABC's This Week that the strategy is genius.
First of all, we're talking about 26 years ago. Perfectly legal. We should get that straight immediately. This is a perfectly legal application of the tax code. And he would have been a fool not to take advantage of it.
The other spin came from the likes of former Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders on the same program.
If Mr. Giuliani thinks that Mr. Trump is smart and all the rest of us are dummies because we believe in America, we believe in our kids, we believe in national defense, well, I think they have a very distorted view.
The Times reported that the loss 21 years ago may have allowed Mr. Trump to avoid paying federal income taxes for up to 18 years. Another example of voters rejecting the advice from their government and the establishment. First, it was the UK vote to leave the European Union. Now, voters in Colombia have rejected a peace accord between President Juan Manuel Santos and a rebel group that would have ended 52 years of conflict. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The vote followed 4 years of peace negotiations between the government and the Armed Revolutionary Forces of Colombia, or FARC. Polls had earlier shown the yes vote comfortably winning the referendum. The Santos administration had touted the development and economic growth potential that peace would bring. This year, the Obama administration had pledged $450 million to aid the post-conflict process. An expert on peace talks at the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington tells the Wall Street Journal that the vote is a devastating blow for Colombia, especially since there's no plan B. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. It's 9 minutes now after the hour. An 18-year-old man has been killed by police in Los Angeles following a car chase. Authorities say they tried to pull over Carnell Snell Jr. because the vehicle had paper license plates and they suspected it was stolen. Because Mr. Snell is black, it's the latest incident to raise concerns about racial bias. There have been demonstrations near the shooting scene. LAPD said during the chase, a male passenger got out of the car and fled on foot. He was followed to a residence where he was shot and killed. Police say a handgun was recovered at the scene but did not say who it belonged to. Meanwhile, police groups are pushing back against what they say is unfair scrutiny of fatal police shootings of black men this month in cities like Charlotte, Tulsa, and El Cajon, California, which have brought outrage and condemnation from community leaders and some politicians. It's a story from Wall Street Journal reporter Valerie Borlein. Valerie, what are you hearing?
Well, there's a sense among law enforcement officials that they are scrutinized even when they're doing things by the book. In particular, in Charlotte, where there was a fatal shooting of Keith Scott, a police officer, the chief has expressed some frustration with saying, hey, guys, we're following our training. Our guys did what was appropriate in a threatening situation. Why so much second-guessing? And this this current of feeling like among law enforcement officials that they can't win, even when they try to do their jobs, has led to some frustration and to some pushback.
Yeah, and I think we've all heard that phrase, the Ferguson effect, right, where cops may be slower to respond in theory to an emergency. Is that, I don't know, did that come up at all in this?
Yeah, well, the Ferguson effect, you hear an awful lot about it, and you're right, Gordon. One aspect of it is this fear, and there's been some evidence that this happened immediately after Ferguson in 2014, that police will be more tentative about the way they conduct business. But the corollary to that, that a Department of Justice study found, was that, in fact, the Ferguson effect may actually be these incidents stirring up frustration among Black people and communities, and emboldening people that say, hey, you know, this is wrong. And that instead is what leads to the violence.
All right. So what kind of pushback are we hearing then?
Well, you know, there are these legal defense funds that police can pay to join, either through their union chapter or individually. I think it's $68 a year for an individual to be able to have a lawyer of your choice if and when something happens, whether you are in the right or potentially not. There have been pushes on social media from police officers saying, hey, there's so much noise out there cracking down on us. Can people that support Blue Lives Matter and these other causes speak out as well? So there'll be some vocalization of where we're coming from. And there have been some laws passed in the past several years, a move towards a Blue Lives Matter law, and which would make things like attacks on police a hate crime, essentially make them a protected class of people. And there's some indication that when legislatures come in back in session, especially in red states, that those laws may get renewed interest.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal national reporter Valerie Borline. Her piece is called Police Push Back at Scrutiny of Fatal Shootings. They do seem to be between a rock and a hard place at times, I must say. I know in Charlotte, the feeling is, well, wait, we got to turn this video over to the district attorney first. You know, that's evidence. We can't just start throwing evidence out. I guess I sort of see both sides there.
Well, I think that's one of the things that's really caught law enforcement off guard. In many cases, they do want to release the video. They think it supports their position, but just as a piece of evidence, it's the fact that memories are very pliable. So if you haven't interviewed all the witnesses about what they saw and they see the video may likely influence their recollection. So that's one aspect of it. And as well, I think that there's a sense among criminologists, the people that study this stuff every day, that if anything, these videos and seeing what happens in these sad cases may force a conversation about use of force around the country.
Right.
And so even, you know, how we move, you know, they call it the ladder of escalation of force, how you move from, you know, baton to taser and on up to lethal force may force a conversation about changes in training at some point.
Thanks, Valerie. Wall Street Journal national reporter Valerie Borline. It is 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Coming up next, what happened to Kim Kardashian in Paris? Thanks for being with us on this Monday. It's kind of unusual. We're bringing you a story about Kim Kardashian, and it's not needling her in some way. She's making news today for reasons other than her usual stuff, like, you know, lack of clothing. But police in Paris say masked men robbed her at gunpoint in a luxury home early this morning, stealing millions of dollars of her jewelry. Authorities say there were five attackers who struck around 3 a.m. inside a block, as they call it, used by celebrities and other rich people. A statement from her publicist says she's badly shaken, but physically unharmed. She stayed in the same home/residence at least once before. Her husband, rapper Kanye West, abruptly ended a performance in New York less than an hour into his set as news of the robbery spread.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Stop it. I'm sorry. This is a family emergency. I have to stop the show. The
video was posted by fans on Twitter. Kim, by the way, has been silent on Twitter so far today. Meanwhile, police were guarding the site of Kim K's robbery this morning. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Rasa Kay is here. She has more of America's First News.
Gordon, evacuations are underway by all who can find somewhere to go in Jamaica, Cuba, and Haiti as Hurricane Matthew churns across the Caribbean. The National Hurricane Center called Matthew extremely dangerous, a Category 4 storm with maximum sustained winds near 130 miles per hour. Hurricane specialist John Cangelosi at the National Hurricane Center in Miami.
For Haiti, we think hurricane force winds are expected across the island beginning later today and tonight. Similar conditions for winds in Jamaica.
Lashing rains from Matthew may have depressed the turnout in Colombia, where voters rejected a landmark peace deal with FARC rebels and a shock referendum result with 50.24% voting against it. The deal was signed last week by the president and FARC's leader after nearly 4 years of negotiations, but needed to be ratified by Colombians. No one from Donald Trump's campaign is refuting the New York Times report over the weekend that showed how Trump used Byzantine tax laws to cancel out income taxes for as long as 18 years after his real estate and casino empire nearly collapsed in the early 90s. Trump's campaign is planning to go after Hillary Clinton over the way she's earned her money. Campaign advisor Jason Miller tells The Washington Post Trump will highlight the fact the Clintons claimed they were broke after leaving the White House but are now worth millions. The 29-year New Jersey Transit veteran at the controls of the train that jumped the tracks in the Hoboken station Thursday morning says he was fully rested but has no memory of the accident. Thomas Gallagher was injured when the train derailed. Bella Dinzar is vice chairman of the NTSB.
The engineer remembered that as he was entering the station, he stated that he was going 10 miles per hour.
Only one data recorder has been recovered so far from the wreckage, and it wasn't working. The Bills blanked the Patriots 16-0 in Foxborough, New England, shut out at home for the first time since 93. Quarterback Tom Brady completed his four-game Deflategate suspension yesterday and returns to the Patriots this week. The air we breathe can impact productivity. A multi-center study published in the Harvard Business Review finds when outdoor air pollution rises, office workers automatically slow down. The study's authors say the results might suggest air pollution impairs cognitive function.
Whoa, now we have an excuse for an off day at work. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah, something in the air today, boss. Sorry about that. Get back on it tomorrow. Thanks, Rasa. 23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. If your family finances would be in better shape if your home cost less than $1,000 a month, there are places where that can happen. As MarketWatch reporter Katie Hill has found, you don't have to make a ton of money to afford a decent home in some cities. Katie set this up.
So this is a study out from the mortgage data company HSH.com. They looked at the cost of the median home. This would be what you spent in the principal, interest, taxes, and insurance payments. And they looked at that for 27 cities for a person with good credit and who put 20% down. And they actually found six places where all of that, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance payments, would be under $1,000 a month to buy the median home in that area. The cheapest city of all of the ones they looked at relatively low. Large metro areas, by the way, but Pittsburgh at about $756 a month, which really means that someone earning about, you know, $32,000-$33,000 a year could actually afford to buy a home there, which is, you know, that's pretty great. I mean, you're looking on the flip side, when you look at like San Francisco, where I think you need about $160,000 to be able to afford the median home to make that much a year, you know, so it's really, you know, $160,000 income versus $30,000 income in Pittsburgh to afford the median home. You can really see there's a wide discrepancy in this country.
You know, and Pittsburgh's interesting because I thought I just saw a headline within the last couple of days saying that Pittsburgh right now is where all the cool kids are going.
Yeah, well, Pittsburgh has a pretty cool foodie scene. There's a lot, like, you know, we used to think of it as, oh, it's factories, or, you know, there used to be this kind of perception of Pittsburgh as nothing going on, but there's really a lot more going on. And yeah, if you can afford to buy a home at $750 a month, I mean, that's a pretty compelling place to go. So I've read the same thing.
Yeah, we're speaking with MarketWatch reporter Katie Hill about her story entitled Six Cities Where You Can Own a Home for Under $1,000 a Month. And it's got to be... I mean, you want to do this assuming there's some sort of job growth taking place, right? Or something
right.
trendy happening?
And, you know, so I'll list you out the other cities, and you can see that some of them don't exactly have the best job market. So there you go. But number two on the list is Cleveland. It cost about $803 a month. Cincinnati, $868. St. Louis, $890. Detroit, $899. And Atlanta, $935. Detroit's job market, obviously, is not the greatest.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, I mean, that there still is quite affordable housing there. But, yeah, under $1,000 a month, that's a pretty decent deal. And that means for all these people, it's about a $40,000 income or less, and that, you know, making sure that you don't spend more than 28% of your pay on housing, and that's how they got these numbers. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, the average person can certainly afford a decent home in these places.
Thanks, Katie. Market Watch reporter Katie Hill. So summarizing her story, the monthly cost of home ownership in Pittsburgh, $756. Next on the list, Cleveland at $803, followed by Cincinnati, St. Louis, Detroit, and Atlanta at $935 a month. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Trips to the post office, as you know, are never convenient. So why not get postage right from your desk with Stamps.com? Stamps.com even gives you special postage discounts you can't get at the post office, including first class, priority mail, express, international, and more. You'll never pay full price for postage again. Here's how Stamps.com works. Using your own computer and printer, buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package. Then just hand your mail to the mailman or drop it in a mailbox. It's that easy. It's no wonder over 600,000 small businesses are already using Stamps.com. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer, including postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Get started with Stamps.com today. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Deal. That's Stamps.com and enter Deal. Thanks for being with us on this Monday, October 3rd. Gordon Deal with Rasa Kay, who's filling in for Jennifer Kashenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Hurricane Matthew hits Jamaica, with Haiti and Cuba next in line. Could hit the U.S. later in the week. One of the data recorders in that deadly New Jersey commuter train crash wasn't working. Kim Kardashian robbed at gunpoint in Paris. The 6-year-old boy injured in last week's school shooting in South Carolina has died. In sports, U.S. wins the Ryder Cup. Baltimore and Toronto tomorrow for the AL wildcard. Vikings try to move to 4-0 tonight in Monday Night Football. Well, there's an article in the Cincinnati Inquirer by a guy named Dan Horn, and it's quite possibly the dumbest article about politics ever written. The reporter is a fool, and the editors are morons. Actually, he wrote all of that, trying to make a point about the incivility of social media. He joins us now. Dan, explain the piece.
Well, we decided we'd take a look at the kind of troll culture out there in this election year, given how nasty things have been on the campaign trail, but also on our own comment boards, our own Facebook pages and website. And, you know, what we found is there's a lot of ugliness out there. You know, as a general rule, I try to stay away from a lot of our comments and our Facebook page myself this time of year because things get pretty ugly. But I had to do a deep dive for the story and spend a lot more time than I normally would there, and it did not disappoint me in terms of how toxic some of that stuff got.
I think all of us have seen it in some way, shape, or form on our Facebook feeds or in tweets or whatever, but where did it come from? Anybody try to address that, like kind of just the incivility?
Well, there's a lot of theories out there, and one of the popular ones is that as we've moved more toward online communications where people don't have to sit down and look at each other and talk face-to-face and eye-to-eye, that it's a lot easier to say things that maybe you would never say if you were sitting in a room with somebody. And that rings kind of true to me, I think. And then you add to that just the nature of this election and just how nasty it's been and some of the things that the candidates themselves have said. And I think you put all all those things together and you get permission to kind of go out and say some of this stuff.
Man, I think what bothers me, and I'm sure you see it too, is kind of the anonymity. Somebody unwilling to stand up and put a name behind one of these, provocative statements.
Right. You do get a lot of that. We moved a few years ago to Facebook comments only. So people have to have a Facebook account comment on our page. Now, granted, you can make those up too sometimes. But what's interesting is that even with that requirement, you see a lot of really nasty stuff being said, but people are just putting their names to it. You know, they got a little picture of themselves with their kids on there, and then they're saying pretty nasty things to each other on the website.
Yeah, we're speaking with Dan Horn, reporter at the Cincinnati Inquirer. His piece is called "Your Candidate Stinks: Social Media Goes All In on Political Incivility." Anybody say that this might be just a phase, like we're still managing or learning to manage social media and the consequences? Like, might we develop a thicker skin or something? I don't know.
Sure. I think there's some hope that that's the case. There's no way to know for sure because we are still relatively new to this. And, in the early days of this kind of communication, maybe things are a little uglier than they'll be when we figure all this out down the road. But for now, I think it's not getting better. Part of that may just be the kind of election we're having this year, and people feel emboldened to say and do the things they're doing. But no one knows for sure. Like I said, the fear, I think, among some folks is that this is a new normal in terms of political conversation.
Yeah. On any given week, are you, like me, one, either a mouthpiece for the Obama administration or a Fox News wannabe?
That changes hour to hour sometimes, depending on the article, and
right.
often on the same article.
Oh, right.
It's interesting that even with this, and I think part of the issue you see with the civility issue is that people come to these articles and come to these comic boards with set ideas. They're not coming to change minds, and they're not coming to learn new things. They're coming to argue their point.
Yeah.
And I think you see it, I see it when we see comments and get emails ourselves, and you certainly see it feeding into this frenzy you get online. People, they come to it thinking you're in the bag for one side or the other, and there's not much convincing them otherwise. And even with this article, I've seen it, I worked really hard to make sure I found a lot of bipartisan trolls out there, and they are out there. But I still got some comments on both sides saying, you're shilling for this side or that side.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Join the crowd, right? Dan Horn, reporter at the Cincinnati Inquirer. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money. Thanks for being with us. Are you getting used to the transition from swiping to dipping your debit or credit card? It's been 1 year since the rollout of chip cards designed to make our purchases more secure. How's it working? We're joined now by Jason Oxman, CEO of something called the Electronic Transactions Association. Jason, how do things look?
Well, things are looking quite good, and it's important to remember why we did this. We started the chip card migration on October 1st of 2015 to address the single most common form of card fraud in stores today, and that's counterfeit card fraud. Criminals had developed an expertise in creating counterfeit magnetic stripe cards. Very easy for them to do because the magnetic stripe is a 40-year-old technology. It's actually the same technology used in cassette tapes. That's how old it is. And criminals were racking up about $3 billion a year in counterfeit charges on counterfeit credit cards. So the chip card migration is incredibly important to address that issue.
Very good. So where's that $3 billion in fraud number today? Has it come down noticeably?
We've noticed a 54% reduction in counterfeit card fraud in merchants that have upgraded to chip readers. So that's a good early sign of success.
Very good.
The important update to chip readers in merchants means that merchants will not have any liability for fraud. And, of course, consumers never have any liability for fraud, whether they're using an old magstripe card or a new chip card. But we do think this upgrade is important given the increasing sophistication of criminals.
Is the rollout complete at this point? I still feel like even recently it's been fairly inconsistent as to whether there was a chip or a swipe required.
I think it's important to remember what a massive undertaking this is, both for banks in reissuing cards and for merchants in upgrading their infrastructure. So where we are today, 1 year after the start of the migration, about 90% of consumers have a chip card and have used it. So we've replaced over 600 million cards in the market. And on the merchant side, we're closing in on the 2 million mark for the number of merchants that have upgraded to chip readers. But as you noted, many merchants have not yet completed the upgrade work. Most large merchants have done so. And in fact, of the close to 2 million merchants that have upgraded, about 75% of them are small businesses, so a lot of small merchants have done so as well. Some merchants have decided not to upgrade yet, and in fact, there's no requirement that they do so. This is not a mandatory upgrade. And some merchants are still working on updating the software that goes along with their payment system. Mm-hmm. So we do expect to complete the migration soon, but there is still work to do, and it's an enormous undertaking.
We're speaking with Jason Oxman, CEO of the Electronic Transactions Association. We're talking about 1 year later after chip credit cards and debit cards were introduced. Online purchases, Jason, is that the next frontier in tackling fraud? Because obviously a chip doesn't matter when it comes to online stuff.
That's right. We don't have chip readers in our houses, so the chip card itself doesn't help online. We are deploying other technologies to address online fraud. Criminals are very sophisticated. Online hacks are something that we worry about every day. New technologies like end-to-end encryption and tokenization protect information as it travels across the web. And online merchants are incredibly sophisticated in the fraud algorithms that they use to make sure you're protected. And again, as a consumer, you have no liability whether you shop online or in a store. So your information is protected, and you're protected if anything goes wrong with the transaction. And new technologies are going to really help fight fraud online as well.
Thanks, Jason. Jason Oxman, CEO of the Electronic Transactions Association. Need a website? Why not do it yourself with Wix.com? No matter what business you're in, Wix.com has something for you. Used by more than 84 million people worldwide, Wix.com makes it easy to get your website live today. You need to get the word out about your business. It all starts with a stunning website. With hundreds of designer-made, customizable templates to choose from and the drag-and-drop editor, there is no coding needed. You don't need to be a programmer or designer to create something beautiful. You can do it yourself with Wix.com. Wix.com empowers business owners to create their own professional websites every day. When you're running your own business, you're bound to be busy. Too busy. Too busy worrying about your budget. Too busy scheduling appointments. Too busy to build a website for your business. And because you're too busy, it has to be easy. And that's where Wix.com comes in. With Wix.com, it's easy and free. Go to Wix.com to create your own website today. The result is stunning. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning. Rasa Kay is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, Hurricane Matthew is packing winds of 130 miles per hour and is the most ferocious storm to threaten the Caribbean in nearly a decade. Haiti and Jamaica expected to get hit today with landslides, high waves, and flooding possible. Officials in both countries urging people to evacuate from vulnerable areas, calling the situation life-threatening. The storm could threaten the southeast U.S. later this week. The numbers are staggering, but there's nothing illegal about them. The New York Times obtained Donald Trump's 1995 tax records, reporting over the weekend that Trump may have taken advantage of special rules for real estate investors that legally allowed him to use his $916 million loss to offset $50 million a year in future taxable income for as many as 18 years. Hillary Clinton is picking up the endorsement of a very popular figure in a key swing state. Cleveland Cavaliers star LeBron James has backed the Democratic nominee. Angry demonstrators poured into the streets of a South Los Angeles neighborhood Sunday night, the second night of protests over the fatal shooting of an armed 18-year-old man. Carnell Snell Jr. was shot Saturday afternoon by police outside his home after police say he bailed out of a vehicle being pursued by officers. Cops say he was armed with a gun, which was later recovered at the scene. The engineer of a passenger train says he has no memory of the crash that killed one person and injured more than 100 last week in Hoboken, New Jersey. NTSB Vice Chairman Bella Dinzar says an event recorder retrieved from the wreckage isn't working.
We still have no firm date on when the controlling car can be accessed so that we can access the other event data recorder.
The woman killed in the crash is being laid to rest today in her native Brazil. 34-year-old Fabiola Bitar de Kroon was on the platform as the train barreled into the station. Broadcasting legend Vin Scully sat behind the microphone for the final time during the Dodgers 7-1 loss to arch-rival Giants in San Francisco, where Giants fans gave him standing ovations for 67 years as the voice of the Dodgers.
I have said enough for a lifetime, and for the last time, I wish you all a very pleasant good afternoon.
And the Major League Baseball regular season is now over.
All right. Mike and I will certainly be watching the Mets on Wednesday when they host the Giants in the National League wildcard. Thank you, Rasa. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Glad you're with us. A small town tavern in central North Dakota is now laying claim as the center of North America. Hanson's Bar in the town of Robinson, a town of fewer than 40 people, is now touting its continental bullseye status. The town of Rugby, about 85 miles north, lost the trademark on its phrase as geographical center of North America, and the town of Robinson raised $350 from the residents to purchase it. The Associated Press, by the way, says they back their claim there in Robinson through what they call barstool science. Wow. How can you not believe it? For Rasa Kay, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.